And I want to, as you know, I've been having a problem the last few years with back and sciatica issues, and I've been taking pain medications. And I don't know, I can't give an explanation, but Friday evening seemed to be a combination of reaction to some of the pain meds, but also from pure exhaustion of a lot of things have been going on in the last few months. This putting together the convention, but a lot to do with work, even having earlier in the week been in court to do with a case with my office. And work and the non-24 hours. So I've been working basically on sleep deprivation, and people have been telling me to be careful and try to get some sleep. It appears, to the best of my knowledge, and I'll find out later when I meet with my medical doctor, that the combination of taking the medications and the lack of sleep all hit me, and I really virtually almost very little remember what happened Friday evening. No alcohol. I haven't had anything to drink since probably Christmas was the last time. I'm not much of a drinker, not anti-drinking. So it wasn't that. It's just the prescription medications. I'm sorry for that. And if I may have said something or did something, as people have told me, I shouldn't worry about it. But I apologize. It was nothing that I am aware of. And so if I'd done anything. Okay. The other thing was, if that was the only problem I had, I'd be very grateful. Though I might not be here. I might be in some other place locked up. And then the other thing was, you know, I just still the exhaustion running around and worrying about a lot of different things. I got prepared last evening for the banquet or everything and turned on the news to hear what was happening in the world. And sat in the chair, and this was like at a little before 5 o'clock, and the next thing I know, it's 10:30. So I apologize for that. I let some people down on that. And actually even had... we were going to do something about the 80th anniversary. I actually had brought in two candles that would be 80, and we were going to put it on Donna's spice cakes, and would have just at least had like a birthday party there. Well, unfortunately, those are in my pack right now. They didn't get done last night. But I am glad that Donna got her the CCB lifetime membership, and I want to thank everyone who contributed to that. I know there were others who were interested, but we had reached the amount we needed. And so on behalf of the organization, I want to thank Donna for her years, but particularly the last 4 years of her leadership to the organization. She's always been there and has been transparent, and you have no idea how much she's being committed, just like her predecessors, to the organization and putting everything else behind while she's put and the leadership as president in front. And we've been very fortunate, and I know that tradition, you know, will continue with our incoming president, Jeff Tom. But I want to thank personally... thank Donna for everything that she has given to us, and I know she will continue doing so in the next few years. So thank you, Donna, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk to everyone. And again, I apologize for my problems and how it's impacted the organization as a whole. So thank you very much, and have a good, safe trip back home.
He did write that check to the organization for $1 million. We got that somewhere.
I have to chuckle because, Gene, thank you. You have been a huge support I don't know what you threatened everyone with, but they all kept the secrets. Mitch found out from what I was told last night about a day or two before, and he didn't even tell me. So, so thank you, and thank you all of you, and that's part of what I wanted to. Part of what I wanted to share is that, just again, thank you for last night. It was a wonderful surprise, and it definitely means a great deal to me, and I will always treasure it. And Jean, the only thing I will say about Friday evening, because I realized that you were having struggles, and you did not do anything at all whatsoever to embarrass yourself or anything. The one thing that I heard you say was you began in true Jean fashion, you were advocating for something dealing with transportation regs. And Ron shared, and he said, "Oh, that must be later in the agenda." He's, rereading his speech or something that he's advocating on for transportation regs that's going to happen later on in the evening. And I leaned over to Ron and I said, "No, Gene is having some struggles." And he goes, "Talk about dedication." So thank you, Gene. Oh, let's do one more quick door prize, and then we're going to hand it over to our secretary. So let's do one more quick door prize. And we should probably keep the door prize box up here. We're going to do a bag of fudge from Katrina McCurdy and $25 cash prize from the Solano County Council of the Blind, and we will have Jean draw. Karen Schroeder. Oh, out in the room. Let's see who's next. Diane Deutsch, are you in the room? Yeah. Yay! All righty. Good for you. Yay. At this point, I don't know if we have a microphone stand unpacked. Or are you okay? All right. At this point, I'm going to give the microphone over to our secretary for the reading of the business meeting minutes. No stand.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Thank you.
Business meeting for the fall 2013 CCB convention at the Del Mar Marriott Hotel. Friday. Credentials. Pamology presented the credentials report. The chapters that were not seated were Antelope Valley Chapter, Golden Gate Chapter, Greater Lakewood Chapter, High Desert Chapter, Humboldt County Chapter, Inland Empire Chapter, and Solano County Chapter. Motion, it was moved and seconded to approve the Credentials Committee report. The motion passed unanimously. Elections. The following officers and directors were elected to the CCB Board of Directors. Roger Peterson, Second Vice President. Judy Wilkinson, Secretary. Artis Bazin, Director. John Ross, Director. Linda Perrell, Director. Robert Wendt, Director. And Vita Zavoli, Director. Saturday. Constitution and Bylaws. Gabe Griffith gave the second reading of several amendments. All proposed amendments passed The amended sections were Article 1, Constitutional Amendments, Article 4, Newell Perry Endowment Trust, Article 10.4, Board of Directors Composition. Gabe then gave a first reading of several more amendments. Thank you. Several more amendments to be voted on Sunday morning. Sunday, Gabe read the business minutes from the spring 2013 convention. Motion, it was moved and seconded to approve the minutes. The motion passed. Constitution and bylaws revisited. Gabe gave the second reading of several amendments. The amendments were all part of Article 8. The amended sections of the Constitution were 8.2, 8.6, 8.7, and 8.9. There was also the creation of a new bylaw number 4, specifying the membership and officer sheet. Motion, it was moved and seconded to adopt the Constitution and Bylaws Committee report. The motion passed. Resolutions. Jeff Tom read the resolutions. Following is a listing of the resolutions and the action taken. 2013 B1, State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind, pass. 2013 B2, IHSS Reader Services, pass. 2013 B3, Department of Rehabilitation Purchasing, pass. 2013 B4, Volunteers, commendation, pass. 2013 B5, BEP, pass. 2013 B6, Guide Dog Users of California, pass. 2013 B7, Hotel Appreciation, pass. Motion, it was moved and seconded to accept the Resolutions Committee report. The motion passed. Treasurer's report. Peter Pardini gave the treasurer's report. Total assets are 1,057,243. That number again is 1,057,243. The full report is available by contacting the CCB office. Motion, it was moved and seconded to accept the treasurer's report. The motion passed. Committee reports. Publications. Linda Perrell announced a survey that is in the BC regarding future formats. Membership. Artis Bazin asked all chapters and affiliates to send her the email addresses for 2 members of their chapters for the membership email list. Credentials. Pam Pology thanked everyone for getting their information in on time and for all their help. TOG asked people to fill out the survey on web content and announced that the website may be down while it is being migrated to another service. New business. Margie Donovan announced that she feels there should be a flag at the front of the room during the Pledge of Allegiance. Mitch said there could be problems due to storage. Jeff suggested encouraging the Convention Planning Committee to urge scout troops and other color guards in local areas to bring in a flag. Jean said that committee already does this. Motion, Margie moved that if there is not a flag in the front of the room, that the Pledge of Allegiance be suspended. The motion was seconded. The motion failed. Pam Metz thanked the GDUC board for all their work over the summer and the CC board for their support. Old business. There was no old business. Public comments. Mike Keithley thanked the people responsible for keeping the ALD system going. Christy Crespin wanted to know what to do with name badges. The next convention will be in Sacramento at the Arden West Hilton Hotel from April 10 through 13. Respectfully submitted, Gabe Griffith, CCB Secretary.
Okay. Jeff moves the adoption of the minutes as read. Any discussion? If we can get a microphone to Roger Peterson.
I guess the at the end there, the next convention should say April 10th to 13th, 2014. If it may say that and you didn't read it. I don't know.
I read the minutes. I'm sorry. What is the correction, Roger?
Just to add the year.
Okay.
You didn't say 2014.
Okay. Who seconded that motion? Me? Who? Thank you,
Charlene Ornelas.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Okay. Yes.
I'm still having trouble with the institutional memory issue here. So when you look back, you know, like we were just doing, looking back 20 years in the Wine Californian, you look back at the minutes, and you don't know what constitutional bylaw amendments were actually made. And as we have found in the past, when the Constitution was updated, that things were left out. So is it possible to attach the actual language of what's being changed in the Constitution bylaws?
Yeah. If that's the wish of the body, we can certainly do that.
Well, yes.
And so Dirk agreed from the back with what Bernice was saying, that even if it's not read specifically, yeah, but maybe referred to by title, mm-hmm, and always have it attached, mm-hmm, that you'd be in agreement with that. Mm-hmm. Okay. And Dirk, I expressed your sentiment properly, I think.
I would just like you to know that that would be my thinking as well going forward, but I will go back and make sure those items are attached to the 2013 minutes.
Thank you.
Any more discussion? All those in favor of the minutes, as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Okay. Before we go to the treasurer's report, we're going to do a door prize, and I have a 1934. This person was born in 1934. Everyone's been coming up to me, and this person I guess you'd call it a comedy. Remember, call out your name. And this person, I believe, and they were born in 1934, this person, I think, was the first person who caused a bit of controversy on TV for showing her navel. Andrea. Yes. Yay! Barbara Eden. You get a bag of fudge and a $15 Subway card. Yay! Congratulations, Andrea. Let's go ahead and give the microphone over to our treasurer, Peter Pardini. You want to? Then we'll pull tickets. Do you want a regular door prize?
Yeah.
All right. Let's pull names. Judy. Yep. 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 And what's the door prize? Harry and David snack box from ACB Capital Chapter, and Larry Hall. Are you in the room?
Not here.
Not here. Next name. Judy wants that one. Jeffrey Sims. Next name. Go ahead, keep going. Pull out like three and put them next to each other, left to right? Connie Bateman. Okay. Jerry Emmons? Emmonson. Jerry Emmonson. Yay, Jerry Emmonson. Jerry's here. We had some fun times sitting next to each other in the exhibit hall when he was at San Francisco table and I was at the CCB table. On that note, Peter Pardini, please give us our treasurer's report.
Thank you very much, Donna. I'd like to begin by just giving a couple figures. This will be an abbreviated treasurer's report. Just want to point out a few figures that we have. Basically, the California Council of the Blind, our total assets as of December 31st, 2013, are $1,062,996.49. I'm going to read some selected income statement figures for the period January 1st to December 31st, 2013. Our total budgeted income for the period was $194,000. We actually took in $178,659, which is a difference of $15,341. Our budgeted expenses for the same period is here. Our expense budget for the period was $303,970. Our actual expenses for the period were $268,159, and that's a difference of $35,811. For the same period, we had other revenues in the amount of $82,661. We had other expenses in the amount of $245,000. If you take all of our revenue less all of our expenses, the expenses were greater than the revenue by $7,084. And let me just give you one. Our current income for the period January 1st to December, to March 31st, 2014 is $45,986.77. Our expenses for the same period $38,402.59. Our income is greater by our expenses in the amount of $7,584.18. And this concludes the treasurer's report.
Do we have a motion to approve the treasurer's report as read? Christy. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Peter.
I have one other announcement. Basically,
go ahead.
If people got into the meeting room late, there is coffee on the back of the table. I mean, in the back of the hall, back of the room. My coffee hasn't kicked in yet. By the back doors.
And Jeff just reminded me of something. We may be voting because today is Resolutions Day. So make sure that you have your badge with your orange dot so that you can vote. Okay, Peter, did you have anything else for us?
Not at this time, Donna.
Okay. Thank you. Nope, no badge on the table, Jeff. Okay. Well, our resolutions won't be controversial anyway, so we won't be having any voting. Jeff and Judy don't have their badges. Maybe a dog ate it, yeah. Gene has his, I think. So, okay, folks. Jeff says that he's going to buy Gene's vote. Okay. Jeff is getting set up with resolutions. While Jeff gets set up with resolutions, let's draw another name for a door prize. Oh, we only have one volunteer, which is Ed. Okay.
Roger is ready.
Oh, you know what? Yes, that's right. I apologize. No resolutions yet. We won't do a door prize because I need Ed to go to our Constitution and Bylaws Chair, Mr. Roger Peterson. For his report, Roger.
Hello. Gabe told me that he wouldn't be here today and asked me to give a brief update. We had a meeting on Friday afternoon, which was attended by Gabe and David Jackson and Jeff, Tom, and me. And we discussed future plans for the resolution for the Constitution Bylaws Committee to tighten up the verbiage in the Constitution and bylaws relating to the relationship between chapters and affiliates on the one hand and the California Council of the Blind on the other, specifically regarding fiscal matters and reporting for those chapters and affiliates who use CCB's tax exemption, 501c3 tax exemption. And we, Jeff said that he would, in the process of working with the auditors, make sure that he gets from them, you know, what language they would like to see to have everything all legal and above board. That was the primary thing that we talked about. But I guess it also kind of merged into the idea of, well, of, you know, the whole question of the relationship between members and board and affiliates and chapters and so on. And we're still planning to rewrite the two articles in the Constitution that refer to chapters and statewide affiliates so that it's clear that everything applies to both kinds of organizations. And that's basically what happened, I think. And we also decided to perhaps have some telephone conference meetings during the year to keep up with some of these things and look through some of the language and so on. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. I was just going to ask if there is a motion to accept the Constitution and Bylaws report.
Well, I'll move to accept if I can then ask a question.
Yes, part of the discussion, yes. We have a second. Now we'll open it up for discussion.
For at least 20 years, Roger, we've had this goal of collecting chapter and affiliate constitutions and bylaws in the office for reference. And I know efforts along those lines have been kind of slowed, but given the changes in the laws governing not-for-profits and some of the other complexities, I would not only urge the Constitution and Bylaws Committee to renew its efforts along those lines, but to also reach out to our chapters and affiliates. I suspect that we have more than one affiliate with a constitution that hasn't been updated in a decade or two or three. So that's just a friendly suggestion for the Constitution and Bylaws Committee, because we certainly know that between conventions you don't have a whole lot to do. So thank you.
Thank you. And actually, this past year, I think, Lena, it was this past year, we did receive a hard copy constitution, and I scanned it and did the conversion. And so now that chapter has, that chapter does have an electronic copy of their constitution, and they stated they're going to be working on updating it. I'm hoping that we'll put some type of an amendment within the Constitution stating that's one of the things that we as the office must have, is the most current copy of the Constitution. And I think that the Constitution Bylaws Committee, I think there's a member or two that has the technical expertise. If someone has a hard copy only, that should definitely be something that, you know, we convert into electronic copy as well. So, unless it's in handwriting. Is that Vita? Vita Zavali? Thank you. We're in discussion of...
Mic is coming.
I'm not sure this is constitution related, so you'll have to let me know. Is there a process for getting charters for affiliates that no longer have a charter? They've been chartered years ago and it's been passed from hand to hand to hand. Is there some way to get the charters reissued? That's my question.
Thank you. And it's kind of related, but not. But Gene did want to... Oh, you didn't. Okay, I heard Jeff. Yeah, we're wanting to do that, and so the board is definitely going to need to take that up, because I know not all chapters have their charters anymore, and the office, frankly, needs a copy of each charter as well. And I'm told by Ed that the office does not have original copies of charters. So that's something we'll be working on this year as well. Gene?
Okay, thank you. Is it on?
Yeah, it's on.
Okay, it's in my mouth. You know, the one thing I think might also help us, too, is in creating a brand new charter, not that you're going to be rechartered, but just to get you the copy you're requesting,
if that back in your records, hopefully you actually have the date that you did receive the charter and the location, that kind of information would help. I know, for instance, the ACB Capital Chapter, it's existed before 1934, and we do not have any records of it. I'm assuming, Mitch might have a better idea than this, when the merger took place, that those chapters that were part of the Associated Blind of California may have been issued another charter as a result of that to be officially part of the California Council of the Blind. But changeover in our administrations internally, that wasn't something that some of our leaders during the years shared or transferred over to the people that followed them. So I know the ACB Capital Chapter very much would like to have that charter. So, and you know, we don't know the actually original date that our chapter existed, but became in existence before 1934. Thank you.
And for, I'll give it over to Peter in just a second. For the one of the things Foster Brown, one of our life members, shared a wonderful idea. And with this discussion of the charter, I think we'll carry it over. And I wish to, I'll be speaking to the board about it. But I really believe in Foster. Thank you for the inspiration. I don't know if you're here, but you definitely are CCB as well. All of us are, and thank you for that. I want us to look into purchasing so that we can issue these updated charters and updated life member certificates. I understand from artists and artists, thank you for telling me directly that you did not receive your life member certificate, because I want every life, cell phone. I want every life member. Foster might be calling in. Maybe we are streaming virtually. I want us to look into doing a one-time investment of getting a gold seal for CCB that says, you know, it has our logo and when we were established, et cetera, et cetera. They look sharp. It shows our pride in CCB, and we can use that gold seal on life member certificates, reissuing new charters, and things like that. So that's something that we're definitely going to look into, and that goes with the reissuing of the charters. So again, Foster, thank you for your inspiration, and artists, thank you as well. Peter.
As part of the Constitution regarding chapters and affiliates, it is my hope that the Constitution Committee, along with the Board of Directors, look at basically having each chapter and statewide affiliate have their own 501c3 status. We also need, and we will be, it's very important that we look into this seriously. With the changes in nonprofit organizations and the scrutiny of the IRS, the Franchise Tax Board, and other federal and state authorities, I think it's going to become mandatory that each chapter and statewide affiliate have their own 501c3. So I want to get this as part of the discussion regarding changes to the Constitution as it relates to chapter and statewide affiliates. Thank you.
Thank you. Gene has called for the question. Remember, folks, our next board meeting teleconference call will be an open call, and I hope that all the rest of ours will continue to be open. This discussion isn't over, okay? So, and all of you who wish to be in on this discussion will be able to do so. And Jean has called for the question. So all those in favor, please signify by saying aye of adopting the Constitution Report.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Roger, for reporting on behalf of Gabe, our chair. I will now give the floor over to Jeff Tom, who is the chair of our Resolutions Committee. Jeff, thank you. Let's have Jeff give the first.
Well, let me
start
my
reporting, and
people,
we'll do them in between.
And then while I put my first one up, maybe you can do one.
Okay, I'll do one when after he's pulling up the first one.
Yeah. So I want to thank my committee members, and if I forget somebody, please remind me. Dan Smith, Robert Wendt, who couldn't be with us this weekend, but was gave some input, and is always a good contributing member. Gene Lozano, of course, Linda Perel, Dirk Neihart, new member, Steve Mendelson, who did a tremendous amount, Gabe Griffith, and my incredible vice chair who pinch hit for me a lot because I was having difficulty talking, and she did an absolutely wonderful job, and unless the creek rises or something like that, she will be my new resolutions chair and yours, because she's just doing a great job. excuse me. Lena. Lena did a tremendous job. Yeah, let's give a hand. Okay. So I'm going to pull up my first resolution, and we'll have a door prize.
Door prize. We're going to pull some names.
We have a total of 10.
Total of 10 resolutions.
Yes, including the thank you.
Okay, the first door prize is... to let you know, we have an $80 cash prize from an anonymous donor, and that will be the final door prize that we draw at the end of the business meeting. So, we have a $25 cash prize from CCCLV. And a bag of fudge. And do we have Michael Dunn in the room? Nope. Nancy Angwin, are you in the room? Yay, Nancy! Yeah.
Okay, so this is number one. And this came to the committee from myself and some others. It's on state employees technology. Whereas, for employees who are blind or who have low vision, having adequate technology, both hardware and software, to perform the tasks of the job is essential to job performance, as it is for all state employees. And whereas, although the state is legally obligated to ensure that its employees with disabilities have the technology they need to perform their jobs, employees who are blind or visually impaired frequently do not receive appropriate technology. And whereas this failure to provide appropriate technology often results from the agency's lack of experience or expertise with assistive technology. And whereas such actions by a state agency, lead to wasted public funds, downtime for the employee, and in extreme cases, efforts by the agency to terminate the employee or preclude him or her from serving in the position, due to the mistaken assumption that the employee is unable to perform his or her job. And whereas the Department of Rehabilitation, as the entity charged with providing technology to persons who are blind or have low vision, through its relationship with vendors of assistive technology, both hardware and software, and with entities that evaluate the technology needs of persons who are blind or have low vision, is well suited to ensure that state employees' technology needs are met, and whereas the state can, without legislation, begin a practice under which the Department of Rehabilitation would contract with state agencies to perform
the task of acquiring the technology needed by an employee who is blind or who has low vision, and whereas this practice would save the state money and, more importantly, result in better employment outcomes for its employees who are blind or have low vision, now therefore be it resolved in convention by the California Council of the Blind and Convention assembled this 13th day of April 2014 at the Arden West Hilton Hotel in the city of Sacramento, California, that this organization requests the state to adopt procedures under which the Department of Rehabilitation would be permitted to contract with other state agencies to provide for the acquisition of technology for those employees who are blind or who have low vision, and be it further resolved that this organization work with the California Health and Human Services Agency, the Department of Rehabilitation, the Department of General Services, and other appropriate state agencies in order that the commencement of, for the commencement of this practice, and the committee recommends a do pass.
Charlene seconded. Any discussion? Gene?
Oh, good. He's going to give you one. Good.
I was going to ask where it talks about adaptive technologies, if it could be adaptive technologies and software to include there. So whenever you're talking about technology, the software be part of that too?
Yeah, we include hardware and software in a couple of the clauses.
Okay, I thought the whereas, though, it didn't, the resolve, let it be resolved. I missed it.
Oh, so you want it in the resolved as well?
Yes.
Okay, that seems like a friendly amendment.
Hand. Okay. We have a hand. Ed's taking the mic.
Hi, this is Wayne Dick. Is this across the career? Or, I mean, when I got help from the state, I got help one time, and then I never got much help again.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is this across the career, in other words?
Yes, I was a state employee throughout my career, and they didn't keep up with advances in technology.
Yes, well, you know, the Department of Rehabilitation is, we're about to show in the next resolution, is far from perfect in what they do. But but they certainly have more expertise than most state agencies do. And a state agency should be helping its employees upgrade to whatever they need for the positions that they, you know, promote into or transfer into or whatever throughout their whole career, absolutely.
Okay, Ed has another question.
Question, Ron Smith here. Jeff, in that resolution, do you think we should also include, besides the blind and low vision, deafblind?
Well, it would be all state employees with visual impairments, really.
Well, yeah, but you specify blind and low vision, so I don't know if we should add deafblind.
Yeah, I don't think we need to do that. I don't think we need to.
Okay, I actually have, I know Gene's calling for the floor, but Ed identified someone else to me before Gene.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman or President. I've flicked on you with Gene Lozano or Legionnaire's disease. I surely thought that prior comment deserved a whereas clause that the employee should be followed through his career with or her career with appropriate technology.
Well, that's the law. It's
in black and white in our resolve.
And I'm not sure we don't have something like that anyway there that says that they're supposed to provide them with the technology they need to meet the job. We have a clause that says, although the state is legally obligated to ensure that its employees with disabilities have the technology they need to perform their jobs, employees who are blind or visually impaired frequently do not receive appropriate technology. And that's obviously it's whatever job they're being put into, it's going to apply to. So,
and
I think
it's all inclusive, people with disabilities.
It's not obvious to me. I'm just asking that in that clause that we add every step of their the employee's career.
Okay. All right. So let's see. That it's employees with disabilities at every step of their careers. Okay. It's in.
Thank you. Gene?
Yeah. Jeff, I was wondering, and I apologize, I wasn't there at the moment when this was being worked on, or I would have brought this up. You mentioned state employees. Is there, and I don't have the language, so if you could help me if you agree with this. Could we put that it's all-inclusive, including those who work for post-secondary education, since we're state employees, but not yet quite state employees? So, you know, we found out when we did the 508, we had to have another bill to include us to be, that would apply to the three systems. So that's fine.
The only issue with that is that might take legislation to do, or it might not. I'm not really sure. How about if we see where we're going with this and explore that? Because I'm not sure whether that can be done under current authority or not. So let's... Would you mind we sort of look at that and see where we come out? Because I don't want to...
Sure, let's look at it, but let's not have it forgotten.
No, absolutely. No, I totally agree with you, because we certainly want it to apply to everyone.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other discussion on this resolution? Hearing none from Ed. All those in favor of adoption of this resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay, and here we go to the flip side of the Department of Rehabilitation, which only shows how bad things can be for state employees sometimes. This is number two. It is on assistive technology, Department of Rehabilitation, and a number of us really worked on this. Whereas at the behest of the Department of General Services, that department, the Department of Rehabilitation, vendors of assistive technology, and advocacy organizations began discussions on changes in the methodology and procurement of assistive technology for clients of the Department of Rehabilitation. And whereas this effort, which lasted for approximately 2 years, culminated in the adoption of a state price schedule format, which took effect in 2013. And whereas the state price schedule had the goal of making assistive technology purchases more timely, providing good value for the state, and meeting the needs of clients. And whereas notwithstanding the goals and terms of the system, the department has implemented it. I think I'm going to change that to the Department of Rehabilitation, just to be clear. The Department of Rehabilitation has implemented it in such a manner as to cause large numbers of purchases to be untimely and to be made from vendors who cannot best meet the needs of clients and who do not provide best value to the state. Whereas such implementation has resulted and will continue to result in lost jobs and wasted semesters of education. And whereas despite numerous complaints from clients and blind field services counselors and managers, the department has refused to modify its method of implementing its procurement system to adhere to the goals of that system. And whereas the current situation perpetuates a decades-long failure by the department to address timely provision of goods and services to consumers. And whereas the Blind Advisory Committee adopted a motion directing the department to report on methods to modify its application of the state price schedule. Now, therefore, be it resolved, and I won't read the boilerplate for the rest of the time, that this organization call upon the director of the Department of Rehabilitation, DOR, to establish a working group comprised of decision makers from within DOR and a minimum of 2 blind advisory committee members to develop within 6 months a policy for implementing the state price schedule in a manner that addresses the concerns outlined in this resolution. And be it further resolved that should DOR fail to meet this timeline, the California Council of the Blind will seek legislative redress for this long-standing inequity. And the committee recommends a due pass. I so move.
And who is that so move? Bill Gillespie? You don't have to second. Okay. I love you. Discussion. We have a lady who is calling for the mic. And please give your name before
it's
you ask.
It's Andrea Pitzenbarger. Good morning from Orange County.
Good morning.
I just have a comment because I work for a vendor, and this is long overdue, and I want to thank the committee. We've had real problems. Just recently, I had a situation where someone was starting a job at Travis Air Base up here with the military and did not receive her technology until after she started her job and really should have received it before, and the counselor was really trying to work with us to get it, and there was some kind of delay. I still don't know what it was, but, I mean, she was in the process of moving and getting settled to start her work and still did not have her technology, and it was just ridiculous. So I want to just thank the committee because it'll make our job easier, not just for the clients, but for those of us who work for vendors, so that we can get the training in and done for these people in a timely manner to expedite their job readiness. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more discussion on the resolution?
I don't see any hands, madam.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Next resolution.
Okay, sir. Number three. This is on a topic that we have discussed this week. We're already working hard, Donna and many of us, on advocating on this topic. And this is the education budget. Whereas the governor, in his 2014-15 budget, has proposed that the system under which the Department of Education has responsibility for providing large print and braille textbooks to school districts be abolished and instead be placed in the hands of each school district. And whereas, although the Department of Education would be authorized to produce textbooks for a school district for a fee, according to the Department of Education itself, it is almost certain that the level of fees generated by such a system would be insufficient for the department to continue to provide this service. And whereas even if the department were to be able to continue providing the service, the inability to use volume discounts to the extent that it is currently able to do so would mean that the cost of production would be far higher than is currently the case. And whereas if the department were unable to continue in whole or in part providing this service, school districts would have great difficulty in obtaining textbooks because they do not have the expertise to find the specialized transcription services best suited for language, math, science, and other specialized types of transcription. And whereas for a variety of reasons, including the low cost of the department's existing program, the department's ability to find specialized transcription services, and the department's borrowing program, under which books are returned by a school district after their use and lent to another district, the abolition of this system would lead to the failure of school districts to provide large print and braille textbooks for its pupils who are blind or who have low vision in a timely manner. And whereas the inability to obtain books in a timely manner will result in the inability of students to maximize their academic potential and can even impact their ability to advance through school, and whereas the Department of Education is in strong opposition to the governor's proposal, now therefore be it resolved that this organization strongly opposed this misguided proposal and urged the legislature and the governor to maintain the Department of Education's existing responsibility for providing large print and braille textbooks. Committee recommends it to pass.
All right. There was a second that I heard right here in front of me first, a lady. Was that Charlene? Oh, that Teddy Joy's way in the back. I had heard someone, well, they're not identifying themselves. So, Teddy Joy. Okay. Do we have any discussion? Dirk Neihardt. All right. Here goes Mr. Roller Skates. Ed Branch.
When we say timely, I'd like it to say in one of those two clauses, timely and cost effective.
We have cost effective in an, or we have cost, we have the cost part in an earlier clause. I kind of hate to put cost effective there because we're more concerned with the timeliness of getting the books than the cost. So since it's in there, I'd rather not put it in there again. If you are okay.
Thank you, Dirk. Any other discussion?
I see no hands, Madam Chair.
All those in favor of adopting the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay.
Roger? Are you cold?
Yes. I would like the air conditioned place somewhere north of 50 degrees.
He is cold. I know there are penguins and polar bears and all kinds of Arctic critters doing a dance walking around the room. As
we in
take
Sacramento
care of our
are
business.
Fighting global warming with everything we've got.
Oh, boy. You know, a good fundraiser would be a blanket rental. That's what. Yeah. Oh. An orca just swam by. Okay. Unfortunately, we only have one volunteer, and I think Ed went. Ed, who is? Oh, Sarah's here. Okay. All right. So I'm gonna draw names, but Sarah needs to grab a door. Two. Let's get a cash prize and something else. Cash prize and some fudge. Who's the cash prize from?
CCCLV,
$25 cash prize, and some Katrina's fudge. So if you can let me know who that is. Yolanda Escandon, are you here? No. Next. Diane Phelps, are you here?
All right.
Yay! All right. So engineering is going to come and make sure we get rid of all our penguins and orcas and all of those other critters. Let's draw one more. One more door prize. The bears are opposing that. I know. Greater LA chapter is giving $25, and we have a bag of fudge from Katrina McCurdy.
Hey,
Pampology, are you in the room? She is. Okay. And Ed, we picked these two already. All righty, let's go to another resolution.
Okay, yeah. The next one, if we pass it, will be a sort of a long-term goal, but it's. Boy, it's extremely important in my view. I wrote the resolution, so I guess I should think it's important. Expanded core curriculum. This is number four. Whereas it is important that the educational system meet the full spectrum of the needs of all students, including those who are blind or who have low vision. And whereas, due to the unique circumstances of pupils with visual impairments, it is important that both academic and non-academic needs must be met in order for the student to transition successfully into the adult world. And whereas these needs are known as the Expanded Core Curriculum, ECC, and whereas the ECC consists of compensatory or functional academic skills, including communication modes, orientation and mobility, social interaction skills, independent living skills, recreation and leisure skills, career education, use of assistive technology, sensory efficiency skills, and self-determination. That's a lot of jargon, I know. And whereas there is no mandate in existing state or federal law requiring the teaching of the ECC, and whereas the degree to which pupils who are blind or who have low vision receive instruction in the elements of the ECC varies widely from school district to school district. Now, therefore, be it resolved. Yeah, there you go. I hope that's a yes vote for my resolution. that this organization seek legislation This organization seek legislation to provide for instruction in the expanded core curriculum, and the committee recommends a do pass.
Bill Gillespie. All right. Well, now somebody is channeling Mitch over there on the other side. We didn't need a second, but that's okay. All right. We'll open it up for discussion. Mitch.
Oh, sorry about that. You know, Jeff, it occurred to me, and I'm also seeing this as a long-term goal. There are provisions in H.R. 4040 that would affect and impact what the Department of Education in each state does insofar as reporting requirements are concerned. Did you give any consideration to also having state legislation which would get the department or ask the department or require the department to impose or to begin the process of having the responsibility for those activities as well on the state level?
Well, you know, I think that's a very, you know, rational and reasonable approach. And I think that in reality, we're going to have to accept a lot less than, you know, we're going to want anyway. So it could be that some of those very requirements or at least permissive activities that are in H.R. 4040 may be what we eventually go for, so rather than the whole ECC itself. So, you know, I think this was just sort of a bold stroke resolution, and I think we're going to have to work with, you know, people in the field and, you know, legislative leaders to see what, if anything, we can even get introduced.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
But I agree with you totally. I agree.
Because it's going to be a long time before H.R. 4040 passes. We just got sign-on recently when we got back from D.C. from Tony Cardenas. And I think we may actually have a better chance getting some of those provisions passed on the state level. It might happen sooner than on the federal level.
It may. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
This is Mike Keithley, and Mitch addressed my concern, so thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Any other questions?
I see no other hands, Madam Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the resolution signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Chair. Go ahead, Jeff.
Express appreciation to my menthol donor here. This will hopefully help a little bit. Menthol, yes.
It came from a bear. Go Bears. We love the Bears. They're so cute.
All right.
Okay, go ahead, Jeff.
Speaking of Bears, I asked Al Gill when Cal would win another football game, and he didn't know. Okay. Resolution number 5. This is on the retirement of Stuart Wittenstein. And this was Kathy Skivers asked
if we could have
both Gene and I to
quiet, please.
Whereas Dr. Thank Stuart you. Wittenstein has provided outstanding service in the field of blindness education. And whereas Dr. Wittenstein began as a teacher of the visually impaired, and whereas after working in various states, including a lengthy tenure in Texas, Dr. Wittenstein accepted his current position as superintendent of the California School for the Blind, and whereas he has been a lifelong advocate for Braille and is fiercely devoted to ensuring that every student with a visual impairment has the chance to maximize his or her potential, and whereas he has also served on the American Council of Blind Special Education Task Force and currently serves on the Blind Advisor Committee to the Department of Rehabilitation, and whereas at the end of the current school year, after serving in his position for 18 years, Dr. Wittenstein will be retiring as superintendent of the California School for the Blind. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization commend and congratulate Dr. Stuart Wittenstein for his outstanding service to persons who are blind or visually impaired, and wish him our very best in his future endeavors. And the committee, of course, recommends a do pass.
Charlene moved. Well, Charlene seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of adopting this resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Moving on to number 6. And this came to us from CCCLV. And it deals with Medicare low vision aids. Whereas many people who are blind or visually impaired, especially seniors, rely on Medicare for their medical coverage. And whereas Medicare purports to be a comprehensive health care program, and whereas specialized low vision aids are an integral part of vision health and rehabilitation, and whereas Medicare generally refuses to pay for any device that has a lens, due to a Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services CMS interpretation of the statutory eyeglass exclusion, and whereas the American Council of the Blind, in collaboration with other organizations in the blindness field, has proposed a remedy to this problem through the introduction of H.R. 3749. And whereas H.R. 3749 would establish a nationwide 5-year Medicare demonstration project under which low vision aids costing $500 or more would be covered. And whereas the purpose of this demonstration would be to evaluate the physical impact of a permanent change in Medicare policy to pay for low vision devices. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization do all in its power to support the American Council of the Blind in this effort and contact the California Congressional Delegation to urge support and co-sponsorship of this important legislation. And be it further resolved that the California Council of the Blind urge its members to contact their congressional representatives to encourage support and co-sponsorship of this important legislation. And the committee recommends a do pass.
All right. Any discussion? Question? Okay, is that Charlene? Charlene has a question.
I'm wondering, would this include just like glasses also? And I'm saying that because some of us with real low vision, our glasses are phenomenally high in cost.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Mitch.
Two things. Charlene, if your glasses cost more than $500, it might. But the other point, Jeff, I'm wondering, did you consider putting in a resolve clause that once 3749 pass, that we do everything in our power to see that California is one of the areas where the demonstration project is in place?
Okay. Okay.
So should Dan Smith is saying something? Germane to the resolution. Go ahead.
I think the demonstration project that this is talking about, though, calls for a national, nationwide demonstration rather than individual locations.
I'm thinking while Ed gets the mic over to Mitch. Go ahead.
I thought it was too.
He's right across.
Not.
I think that while that's kind of the notion, the way a demonstration project is done, Dan, is that CMS would select certain areas of the country. By national demonstration project, it doesn't mean that every state would be part of the project. It means that a cross-section of parts of the country would be part of the demonstration project.
So
it might be like Northern California, might be Florida, it might be Iowa, places that have a high percentage of seniors who would be part of the target group here.
Mitch, how would this be then? Say something like, you know, resolve that if H.R. 3749 is enacted and the demonstration is limited to certain geographical areas, that this organization, you know, work to ensure that California is one of them.
I think that's fine. Let's just cover our, you know, cross our T's and dot our I's here.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion?
One more hand.
Okay.
Madam President, may I make a comment to Charlene's question?
Oh, go ahead, Bill.
If you need help buying to get your eyeglasses, I would recommend contacting your local Lions Club, because the Lions' main goal is helping people get eyeglasses. My local chapter in Santa Rosa, California, in the last 6 months have helped over 300 people get eyeglasses that they cannot afford.
That is great. Thank you very much for that. Any other discussion?
See no hands, Madam Chair.
Okay. All those in favor of adopting the resolution signify by saying aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, we have two more policy ones and two more non-policy. And this one is a topic that we've talked about this week as well. Accessible health information. This is number 7, yes. And it was submitted by Steve Mandelson. Whereas the departments and other agencies comprising the California Health and Human Services Agency administer a number of health care programs, including Medi-Cal and in-home supportive services, IHSS, as well as experimental and demonstration programs such as the Coordinated Care Initiative, CCI. And whereas entities within the Health and Human Services Agency, such as the Department of Managed Health Care and the Department of Health Care Services, DHCS, supervise and regulate the activities of other insurers and health care providers within the state. And whereas with respect to all health insurance and health care programs operated in the state of California, requirements exist for the provision of various information and notices to covered persons, informing them of actions and decisions pertinent to their access and coverage, and informing them of their rights. And whereas by enacting these notice requirements, the state has repeatedly acknowledged that such information is essential to the ability of consumers to effectively utilize the health care services and resources available to them. And whereas the state has backed up this recognition with requirements for the provision of information to non-English speakers in several native languages that are widely spoken in the state. And whereas Low-income persons who are blind or who have significant visual impairments are a recognized component of the population receiving services under Medi-Cal, IHSS, and other programs. And I'm going to say publicly funded programs because in this case that is a word. And whereas these programs have long been out of compliance with provisions of state and federal law mandating that written communications to program applicants and recipients with visual impairments be in a format that can be read by such individuals. And whereas the continued unavailability of timely, accessible, and accurate program information to recipients who are blind or who have visual impairments stands in marked and increasingly unique contrast to the experience of recipients with normal vision. And whereas this issue has repeatedly been brought to the attention of the Health and Human Services Agency, commencing at least as far back as 2011, when creation of the Seniors and Persons with Disabilities waiver placed most Medi-Cal recipients into managed care. And whereas the State Department of Health Care Services has acknowledged the existence of the problem by establishing a task force to work on this issue in 2013, which task force has subsequently been abolished. And whereas the Health and Human Services Agency still has no comprehensive approach for ensuring that Medi-Cal recipients with vision impairments receive notices and information in alternative formats that they can read. And whereas, although the agency has taken some steps to provide accessible materials in the upcoming implementation of pilot projects for dual Medi-Cal / Medicare recipients, those isolated steps fall far short of providing effective communication. And whereas even these limited efforts have not been replicated or otherwise undertaken with respect to other programs under the jurisdiction of the Health and Human Services Agency, and whereas even private health insurers such as Anthem Blue Cross have begun without prompting from state regulators to implement measures to ensure accessibility to key information with their, for their customers with visual impairments, almost done. Whereas in light of these facts, the California Council of the Blind finds reason to believe that the Health and Human Services Agency has demonstrated a lack of any present or serious intention to rectify the gross inequality and the broad-based denial of legal and constitutional rights arising from the current situation. Resolved. Lost my place here. That this organization demands that the Health and Human Services Agency institute immediate and effective measures to address and rectify the violations of law identified in this resolution. And be it further resolved that this organization offers its resources and expertise in the investigation and implementation of appropriate remedies. And be it further resolved that unless meaningful action is taken by the California Health and Human Services Agency within 90 days of the delivery to it and to the governor's office of this resolution, California Council of the Blind will consider feasible and appropriate legal action to protect the civil rights of persons who are blind or who have, or blind or visually impaired in the publicly funded healthcare arena. And the committee recommends it do pass.
Several seconds.
I would just say for our president's if there's a concern on the back of the president here, this does not commit us to anything in terms of legal action. It merely says we are to consider it. So we're not going to tie this board's hands if things don't begin to happen.
Thank you. Any other discussion? I think that's Andrea. Ed, can you? Yeah.
Jeff, a quick question for you, and this may be dumb. I don't know.
Never.
But I always tell my clients that the dumb question is the one you don't ask, so I'm going to ask it. I use a Medicare provider, and I go to a medical group in Southern California, and they have a website where you can ostensibly go on there and get things like your after-visit summaries and that kind of stuff. It is completely inaccessible. Would this include stuff like that? Because maybe if it doesn't, that should be. Because more and more, I know Kaiser's done a lot of work with accessibility of their sites, but this is like the site for the actual medical group. And
It's would their, not.
It's there in Spanish, but it's not accessible.
It would not include it if it is merely applicable to Medicare, because Medicare itself is a federally. It's not. It's a.
Anybody can go to this medical group. It's just that I use it as a, you know, I have Medicare, so okay. But it's not.
Okay. Well, it still wouldn't apply to it because we're only dealing here with publicly funded state programs. So Medi-Cal, IHSS, other things that people are part of. And we're only talking about the state's obligation to meet to provide accessible information. That's right. You certainly may have a legal argument to make, and in fact, as Roger has said, Lanny and Linda have brought access cases against private health care providers in the past, such as Anthem Blue Cross. So, you know, it can certainly be done.
There are two other hands, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Tuan. I had some concern about when I saw the one of the resolve clause. They said the California Council on the Blind demand. I think that the word demand is too negative. I would thought it's going to be strongly urged.
Okay.
I don't know what you guys think on that.
That's a good point to make. We seldom use demand. The only reason we do it in a case like this is they have been violating the law for so long, and they've known about it, and they, you know, make little sort of piddly steps that they take, which are not comprehensive in nature, because we really get lost in the part of it. It's probably not so much that they intentionally don't want to do it. It's that we get lost in the shuffle because they have so much going on that we just get lost. And unfortunately, the only, you know, one of the only reasons that this task force was created was that, you know, Don and I wrote a letter to the Department of Justice, and they started doing that. Yeah, well, that was true, too. You know, we really have to play hardball at some point.
What that's a perfect example of is, you know, earlier in this convention, someone was talking about, well, we've all talked about it at one time or another during this convention, CCB goes through steps. And we try to work within the system first as much as we can, but then we go to the next step if we have to. So this demand is the next step and is appropriate in this resolution. Thank you.
Mr. President, I hear Dirk. The word Medicare in earlier parts of that resolution. If we're only dealing with Medi-Cal, I think any reference to Medicare should be eliminated.
Dirk, the reason for it is that the state is operating a pilot project that deals with dually eligible people, and that are people who are eligible for both Medi-Cal and Medicare. And that's one of the areas where they're trying to do something. And so that's why it's in there.
We have two more hands, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Hi, this is Nancy from Fresno. I'm just wondering, you mentioned those two cases that were brought against Anthem. Can you tell us whether or not they were won?
No, we didn't talk about cases. We talked about companies that are starting to actually send out materials.
Well, no, you did.
Oh, the case. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry.
Those two.
I think, well, Steve, do you know about the? Yeah. Get your mic.
Yes, Nancy, they were what are called structured negotiation settlements of the kind that Lanny and Linda have so effectively pioneered over the years. No suit was actually filed. No suit actually needed to be filed because upon presentation of the issues and the options and the alternatives and, in fact, the specter of a suit, the company entered into a negotiating process, which resulted in our getting pretty much everything that we wanted from them.
One more, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Hi, it's Charles Navarrete.
You know, they send out notices to recipients of Medicare and other programs which deny coverage of certain costs or services. And as a result of not being able to read those notices, blind and visually impaired recipients are denied due process. And they're having their rights denied without due process. And I wonder if that can be included in that.
I don't know whether we've specifically said it, but we could certainly, I can meld in there whereas that it, the failure to provide these notices often results in violations of their rights, due process rights. Sure. Because you're absolutely correct. And in fact, what it resulted in many cases in the seniors and persons with disabilities waivers is that people would be enrolled in managed care plans, never even realizing that they were being switched into managed care because they had not read their mail. Printed notice.
Okay. Any other discussion on this resolution?
I see no other hands, Madam Chair.
Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor of adopting the resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Okay. This is our last policy one. This came from Jean and Steve Mendelson, and this is number 8, and it deals with support services assistance. Whereas the state of California's employee personnel classification system includes the permanent intermittent position of support services assistant, SSA, and whereas this position is designed to facilitate the provision of reasonable accommodations in the form of various assistance services needed by employees with sensory and physical disabilities in the performance of their jobs. And whereas neither the University of California, UC, or the California State University, CSU Systems, has comparable employee classifications. and then it says carrot. Don't know how that got there, but we'll take it out. Kind of like it, though. Yeah, Gene wants a stick. And whereas currently these types of services, when provided in the UC and CSU systems, are available only on an ad hoc, campus-by-campus, situation-by-situation basis. And whereas the absence or unpredictability of such services can affect job performance and productivity, now therefore be it resolved that this organization strongly urge the president of the UC system and the chancellor of the CSU system, in collaboration with affected employee bargaining organizations and other stakeholders, to implement the same or comparable classifications within their personnel systems that shall include comparable benefits and protections. And be it further resolved that if these systems do not address this problem, problem within a reasonable length of time, this organization shall consider the possibility of introducing remedial legislation. The committee recommends a due pass. Excuse me. Yeah, I know.
Okay, and we have a second. Do we have any discussion? Okay, we have a question, and Ed will raise your hand.
I'm new. Perfect. Could you explain this a little more clearly to me?
Okay, let's get
Okay, in the state of California, if you're state employee, which does not include post-secondary education, if you are needing as an accommodation an assistant to help you perform some of the tasks, which might be doing some research, it might be clerical, it could be a variety of things, but disability related, that is something you are
permitted to have up to 30 hours per week. And that is something that is available to all state employees with the documented disability. In post-secondary education, that is something that our HR offices do not provide. It's you, from campus to campus, you have to, you know, make requests for support. It could be that you may end up with a student assistant. It could be that you have somebody who actually has some of the level of knowledge that somebody that would be working for a state employee in state, that they have at least some education, post-secondary education, familiarity with doing research, so forth. In other words, it's a very entry-level professional position. They're not to do your work, but to help you do the things that you might need that can't be done with computers and other technology yet. And the thing is, as we've had over the years, I've had a variety of things with the last 37 years, and I each time when the person's left, I have had to start from scratch and fight for the whole thing again. And it's just like HR doesn't recognize it, even though the paperwork's there. It's more than just myself. I know that we had a few years ago somebody from the CSU Channel Islands campus who actually belonged to the other organization that was trying to get help from us, and because the threat of him losing his job because he was not going to get the support he needed. HR was just refusing to do so. So we're trying to come up with a resolution so that such a classification be created in the system, since we do in both the UC and state university system, similar to what they have, which is taking a test, being on a list, interviewed, and so forth, just like any other civil service position, with some benefits that can ensure the retention. These are not highly overpaid people either, so it's not going to break the state of California. The Department of Rehabilitation is the state agency, I understand, that does utilize this classification most of any other state agency, and it might be the fact that probably has a higher percentage, I'm guessing, of employees with disabilities that might need this assistance. Does that help clarify?
Okay, wait. Wayne was finishing his, and then Judy, and then Mitch.
No, I understand. I was actually not able to maintain a department chairmanship at Cal State Long Beach because I just didn't have adequate support. I did a pretty good job, but couldn't do a good job. So I understand it exactly. Okay. Student assistants didn't do it.
Yeah, and it is across the board for faculty, staff, and administrators.
Jean, I wonder if we could include community colleges, because I suffered the same kinds of things all the time, like having embarrassing memos go out over my name when a student assistant who truly wasn't qualified, no matter how much I checked and double-checked, you know, sent stuff out. And I had, you know, student assistants quit the day before finals, stuff like that. Would that put too much of a monkey wrench in the works?
President?
Jeff?
We actually talked about it, and I think we're going to have to do some more research because the system is bifurcated in the sense that the chancellor has certain powers, but each district designs and does a lot of their own, even human resources things. So I'm not sure it quite works. No. Hold on. I think we need to do some more research as to how we would approach such a resolution. I think a resolution would be good because we did talk about it, including it. But it would have to be worked on a little bit differently, and I wouldn't want to, so let's come back and work on it for next year and, you know, see how the best way to solve that problem would be.
Thank you. Mitch?
Yeah, Judy raised the same question that I was going to raise, although, Jeff, I think that while each district may have some autonomy, I believe the job classification statewide are the same. Also a comment, let us be careful what we wish for. I get calls from folks who work in the public sector, both here in California and outside. And one of the big problems, and it was why I made such a pest of myself when I worked for the city of Los Angeles, when we established the provision of this kind of accommodation for city employees, is that what tends to happen, and I'm now, in fact, consulting with a member in a school district in Southern California. Once this sort of program is set up, what does tend to happen is that the blind person gets left out of the process, that when a civil service classification is established, when a list results from a testing process, the person who is next on the list or top on the list automatically or almost automatically gets the job, whether that person really can work with the blind employee. So we need to be a little cautious here. If, in fact, this provision gets passed, that blind people don't lose out on the process of hiring the best person who can work with him or her. So I've seen this from experience.
Thank you. Gene seeks the floor.
That's very legitimate, Mitch, because I've also heard where somebody has left a position at a state agency who had the SSA person there, and they inherited that person, and it was not a place that made in heaven, the situation. However, I do understand from other state employees that, yes, they had people from the list, but they were able to interview them themselves and make the final decision. So perhaps that's something we need to be cautious about, and perhaps since we're saying something equivalent where we could work on this and maybe build in some safeguards into it. And I do appreciate your point. It out. It's very valid, Mitch. And just since I have the mic, I just would like the chair maybe to consider something, and if there's an agreement, and I hope this is considered friendly, is perhaps that if this should pass, and when this is sent off to the presidents and chancellors' offices, that the we also send it to the HR offices in those systems, so that anyone else who is right now in the process of trying to get such a position or something equivalent at their campus, that at least HR there on the campus level is aware of this existence, because my campus played clueless on its existence, even though they found the paperwork in my personnel folder that I had been making this similar request over the last three decades. So I'm just saying that just being that maybe it would help somebody else that we don't know about get something started if they see that there is a group of people that are interested in this area and that the state of California does have something.
Okay. Thank you. Any more discussion? Mike Keithley.
What does a reasonable time mean here? 18 months, 2 years?
Well, you know, these things take time. Personnel classification changes, having been with the state for a while and seen some of these things, can take a couple of years on the fast track. So it's not going to be something that is, you know, this is not the swift boat. But I think we'll know within a year whether there's any momentum being built by either of these systems. You know, if they're studying it, if they're looking at it, if they're doing something, we'll have some idea.
Wayne says they call it the tanker model. Any other discussion? No? Yes?
No other hands, Madam
No
Chair.
Other hands. Okay. When I hear silence, sometimes I think it's someone running to get a mic to someone, so that's why I waited and asked. All those in favor of adopting the resolution, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you very much. In 1934, this actress was on Gilligan's Island. And they were the movie star in that song on Gilligan's Island. Yes, who is that? The gentleman.
Ron.
Ron. Yes, you get a door prize, and what you get is $25 cash from San Gabriel Valley Chapter and an ACB Capital Chapter T-shirt. Thank you, Ron. All right, and now we're going to pick some names for a door prize. Two bags. Oh, no, don't tell me the inventory. Okay, what do we got here? No. Cash? You were going to tell me the whole bunch of them. Okay, a $25 cash prize from San Gabriel Valley Chapter and a bag of fudge. And we have Vicki Parker. Are you in the room? Yay, Vicki!
Again, Ron.
All righty. All righty. Next door prize, really quick. Some more names. $25 from San Gabriel Valley Chapter and a bag of fudge made by Katrina McCurdy, donated by BRLC. Who do we have? Richard Coney. Richard, yay!
Crap.
All right. Let's do a resolution.
Well, we have a little technology issue, so I'm gonna.
All right, we'll do some more.
Well, no, I'm gonna try to.
You can
dictate it. These are our form resolutions. It may not be word for word, but it's gonna be very close. This is number 9. Relates to volunteers, and it says something like, "Whereas the volunteers at the 2014 convention of the California Council of the Blind have helped to make this event a resounding success. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization express to each and every volunteer our utmost appreciation for their outstanding efforts at the California Council of the Blind 2014 Conference and Convention."
And
the committee so moves.
And we have several seconds. Any discussion? I'm sorry? Oh, several folks seconded at the same time. Resounding seconds, inclusive of Jane. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you. Let's give away $25 in cash. From ACB Capital Chapter, Vita Zavoli. All righty. So we have our chair for another
resolution.
Okay,
we're going to do our last resolution by dictate as well, because my Bruno just decided to close and not open my resolutions. But I will. Whereas the hotel staff at the Arden West Hilton Hotel have been extraordinarily helpful to the conventioneers at the 2014 convention of the California Conference and Convention of the California Council of the Blind. Now, therefore, be it resolved that this organization express its appreciation to the outstanding staff of the Arden West Hilton Hotel at the 2014 Conference and Convention of the California Council of the Blind. And the committee obviously recommends a do pass.
Several seconds. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Thank you.
And that, Madam President, concludes the work of the Resolutions Committee and our report.
Thank you very, very much. Jean wishes for the floor. Is it for the resolutions regarding the resolutions report? Go ahead, Jean. Make the motion.
I'd like to move for the approval or adoption of the resolutions that were read.
Okay. On the committee report. And we have a second over there from the left. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries. Report adopted. Thank you.
Madam President.
And Jean seeks the floor.
Just,
go ahead.
Just one little clarification on something. I just want so there's no misunderstanding. I was given the situation about resolution number 8 about some of the challenges I had faced with the SSA position. And I just want to make it clear, I have gone without any threats of legal litigation or anything like that. I've gotten the accommodations I've requested to the university as a whole, as well as my office, but it's just been some of the personnel in HR that took a while to convince them to look at it and understand the subject matter, but the university never ultimately was trying to deny me anything. I've been very fortunate, so I just want that to be clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Dirk Neihardt has his hand up. Go ahead, Dirk. Ed's going to get a mic to you.
In our volunteer resolution, are we saying thanks to Sarah and the AT&T Pioneers? And are we saying thanks to the nursing students?
Folks,
from
let him finish. Hey, wait a minute. No. Order from the floor. Let the gentleman finish his statement. Thank you. Well, Dirk, did you finish?
I finished that one. I have another one when you respond.
He has another one. Okay. And yes, the chair and everyone out on the floor is saying that it was inclusive. So yes. Thank you for that.
Okay.
And next statement.
We missed a resolution result that the California Council of the Blind is warmly appreciative of the work all year long by Ed and resolved to give him a $1 an hour raise.
I move we put that man on budget and finance.
We only didn't have it, Dirk, because Ed forgot to write it.
Because he was too busy running around to write it. So. Okay. Thank you. Mona Craig has her hand up.
Jeez. Those of you that are flying Southwest, they've just changed my flight, so pay attention to whatever method of message or you told Southwest to notify you of schedule changes. They just changed mine for an hour and a half.
Ah.
We have another hand.
Another hand?
Madam Chair, this is Ron Brooks.
Hi, Ron.
I just wanted to tell you guys that for me...
Can we have quiet, please?
For me, winning competitions is about winning. And I just wanted to tell you guys, I really, really appreciate your hospitality over this weekend. You guys have been warm and welcoming and a lot of fun. So rather than winning and walking, I'm going to make a $25 donation back to CCB. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Oh, right. So, Ed? Yes? Okay. There is another hand. There goes Ed.
Madam President?
Yes.
Are we going to have any new business?
We will have new business, and we will also have committee old business, and we will also have committee reports if anyone wishes to give them. So,
because I have an item for new business when it comes up.
You have an item for new business. Okay. Before we go on to new business, in 1934, this actress was born on February 14th. We all may know and love her as a really, really neat mother on TV that we would see regularly. And, boy, that house was full of a bunch of kids. Frank Welty. Frank Welty. Go ahead, Frank. Yes. Whoa. $25 in cash from the Greater L.A. chapter goes to Frank Welty. Florence Henderson. And Frank Welty was the one who called out his name. That's why I recognized him. No, well, he called out his name first. He called out his name first so I could recognize him. And then before that, he called out her name. Okay. If anyone needs to leave early, please leave your badge on your chair, and we will come and collect it. So Ed wanted me to make that announcement. Okay, new business, and we'll start with Bill Gillespie, and Madam Secretary has her hands on her Braille note device ready to capture it.
Madam President and the yes. members of CCB, I move that we make Sarah an honorary member of this council for all her many years of hard work helping us out with many, many different jobs. And this is a motion from Bill Gillespie's heart.
Oh, my goodness. So, actually, I have to tell you, and Ed knows everyone by heart right now because he put them all into the database this time. And he has informed me that she already is a member. But that was a wonderful, wonderful thought. Thank you, Bill. Who seeks the floor for new business?
I wanted to just follow up on that. And I would like for all of us to give her best wishes on her pending wedding on May 17th.
Any other new business before us? Linda, I think.
This is about volunteers, too, and perhaps it'll be a little bit provocative. I've already gotten some pushback on it, but I'm going to go ahead anyway. This is called the Volunteer Humanization Project. All week long, I've been sitting in meetings, affiliate meetings and so forth, hearing people talk about, do we have a volunteer in the room? I would like us to adopt a custom of finding out each volunteer's name that is in the room with us and addressing them by name and involving them in the process of what we're doing as much as possible, rather than referring to them merely as a volunteer. I think that gives us a bad name and makes us look more blind by just referring to volunteers rather than giving them names. And I'm going to give an example where this worked out well.
And if we can have quiet, and then I know other people wish to speak, so at that time, go ahead and state your name and or raise your hand, and you will be recognized. But please listen to the person who is speaking. Thank you. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay. So at the women's breakfast on Friday, we had a young lady volunteer named Nessa. And Vita asked her name, and then we referred to her as Nessa throughout the entire event. And then Nessa came and worked with us at BRLC, and I got to introduce her there as Nessa. And it just felt much more warm and engaged to call her by name rather than say a volunteer. So that's my recommendation and concern.
Thank you. And who sought the floor? Was it Andrea?
It is, indeed. And I want to thank Linda for what she said, because I was going to say something similar. What I do, just as an example, when I am with a volunteer in the hotel, I will ask their name. I just have been doing that all along. How did they come to be here? You know, what group are they with? Or how? And thank you for being here, because we couldn't do what we do if you didn't help us. So, and it takes just a couple of minutes to do that, you guys. They're not our servants. They're not picking up our trash. They're not, they're people. We would not want to be treated in the way that, I'm just echoing what Linda said. It makes them more human. I think it makes them know, because they're racing around. It's a lot of hard work, what they do. And so I just want to second what Linda said, and just, it's a practice that I have been following all along.
Thank you very much. And I think that it's definitely a matter of awareness, and you know, we just all need to really make it a practice of being more aware. Also, sometimes our volunteers are stretched very thin, so you may get a change of a volunteer within your session. But I absolutely agree. It's just more of awareness on our parts. And I think that the chair of each meeting is the one to set the tone for that. So thank you for that. And did someone else? Sarah. Sarah wishes to share with us.
I just wanted to say something on behalf of all the volunteers, because you all know I've been doing this for a long time. But every year we have a lot of, is the microphone not on? Oh, I'm not, I don't have it up to my mouth close enough, sorry. I wanted to say something on behalf of the volunteers. I've been here a long time, and I know a lot of you. And our first-time volunteers every year don't. And I really appreciate that you guys all wear your name tags, because that helps my volunteers. And they know who to help, and they can address you by name as well. So we would love to thank you guys for being so gentle with our volunteers and training them, because I can only train them a little bit, and then they take over and you take over. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Someone was asking if go ahead, if you could repeat that question, Sarah.
Sure. Someone was asking what volunteers what organizations the volunteers are from. I've had a handful from my group, which is the AT&T Pioneers. We're a volunteer organization that work for or are retired from the phone company. And we've had a lot of nursing students from Sac State and a handful from UC Davis. Oh, and Sac City Community College.
And another way we received some volunteers is Artist Basin signed us up for a web service called Volunteer Match, and some volunteers were sent to Ed. Two volunteers came from Volunteer Match, which is a web service where people could sign up when they look at our event. So we also got two from there. All righty. Any other new business? Okay, let's do a $25 door prize from San Gabriel Valley chapter that has Nellie Emerson. She had to go catch her flight. Donna Sanchez, are you in the room? Yay!
She wins quite a few times. Good for
Okay. Do we have any old business? Jerry Amundsen. Ed is getting him the mic.
in talking with Sarah, she did mention that she hadn't been a member for years, so I think we should go back and redo what we were talking about when she was out of the room.
In other words, Sarah's not a member, even though Ed said
I stand corrected. She says she is not this year.
Did she? Okay. So you remembered from the past. Right. Okay. Okay.
Well, now he's not, so.
I'm hearing,
I'm not sure, and I really, this is not against Sarah. I mean, it's, I would love to have Sarah as a member, but as far as our Constitution says, I think we only have one permanent honorary member.
Well, it can be for a year.
What folks want to do, and we realize that that you're definitely always here because you want to be here. And it wouldn't be the same without you. Good, it's your turn. You saw what they did to me last night. It's your turn. And so
I have another hand.
Who does now?
So this is Annette. So can I donate her membership? I would like to do that. Okay, that's done then.
Perfect. Perfect. Because it's done and we want you officially as part of the family. On paper.
Thank you. I'm crying. If you could see how much I'm blushing, you would laugh.
Yay. That's why he did it. Okay. We have another door prize. ACB Capital Chapter has donated $25. Judy Wilkinson, yay! We have another. In 1934, this Italian actress, very sexy, very beautiful, she was born. And wait a minute, wait. I heard a name off in the distance, and it was Nancy. I heard Nancy. Nancy, who is it?
That's what I would have said.
Sophia Loren, yes, you get the $25.
From San Gabriel Valley Chapter.
From San Gabriel Valley Chapter. Uh-huh. We're saving them for business. We have another door prize, $25.
She's gone.
Elena Thomason, she's not here. Rosa Gomez is not here. Alice McGrath, are you here? She's not here. Barbara Manapot, are you here? Nope. Abby Schumann, $25 from ACB Capital Chapter. Abby, it's yours. Okay. The next door prize. Oh, no, we're not doing the Big 80. Okay. We're doing the Big 80 at the end. Do we have any committees who wish to give brief updates? And I heard Jean and Pam at the same time, exactly. Pam first.
Thank you, Jean. What a gentleman you are. Thank you. I wanted to talk about credentials for just a moment.
If we can have quiet, please.
Before I do that, I want to thank Roger for the suggestion about the air, even though it's on a bit. It's at least it's going off. And I wanted to take issue with the fact that when I received my door prize, for which I'm very grateful, I noticed that the envelope containing my cash door prize is not accessible. There is no Braille. So I'd like to address that, and I know someone from the Greater Los Angeles chapter is in the room because he just won a door prize. So,
you guys, if we could have quiet from the floor, please.
Thank you. I recall having this discussion at a convention about railing the envelopes in which door prizes are placed. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, guys. Regarding credentials, Bernice so astutely brought to my attention that we need to address at some point with Constitution and bylaws the issue of name changes in chapters and the legalities and so forth, the logistics of it, before we have our next convention, so that I will address the chapters in their legal name. And I'm very grateful to Bernice for her bringing that to my attention, so we can do that. The situation with credentials is, I want to remind everyone, because it's a long time before our next convention, that, and I will send reminders with Jeff's permission, that the credentials and the dues are due by February 15 of that year, just prior to the convention. And if there are any situations where that's not possible, or where something has arisen where you're having a difficulty or a hardship, the key word here is communication. If you'll communicate, please, with Ed Branch, Administrative Assistant, or myself, we will work with you and make things happen. But we can't do it if you don't communicate. And if the communication is not there, there's going to be a problem with the seating. This year, I did exercise some leniency because of the fact that this is a transitional period and it's taking some getting used to. So next year is going to be a little more astringent, but I'm still willing to work with you if I know about it. The other thing is, when we send out the request for information, it's imperative and mandatory that you place the proper information in the proper fields, not just an email where it requests a street address and an email where it requests a phone number, because if that does happen, the chapter won't be seated. So we need the correct information, and we need it in the correct order and in the correct place. And if you guys would please do that, and I hope I'm just preaching mostly to the choir, but we've had situations, and I'm just trying to clean this all up so everybody can be seated. And I thank you for your time. Thanks a lot. I love you guys.
Thank you. In the Constitution, it does state roster with complete information, officer information sheet, credentials, and, of course, your dues. And all of that is in the Constitution. So you're getting lots of notice. And as Pam said, if you need assistance, you can definitely ask for that. But all of those items are now required by Constitution. So did you need to finish your... Okay.
I'm sorry. It also includes members' information. When we don't have complete information on a member, even if their dues have been paid, we can't count them because of the auditing procedures. So, and we did have that situation with a few chapters, and thankfully they're very understanding about it, but we don't want to do that. So, you know, give all the information on all members, and including the dues, of course, and then we can do that. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Correct. That's perfect. I forgot to explain that. Gene.
Okay. I'm going to wear, this is different hats for different committees. First is the chair of the Conference and Convention Committee. Is our intention to have at this coming Friday's connection to have the evaluation form. And what I want to ask is that please, as many people as possible, respond. We usually get maybe 20 to 30 responses, and we know there's more people, but it's really critical because we've tried several different changes, and even if there's things that you liked or disliked that doesn't fit into any of the categories, the questions you have, there is, like, at the end, other. Please put whatever those comments are. That will help the committee and whoever is the chair of the Conference and Convention Committee and the makeup of those individuals who are on that committee. So it's really critical for that to give us some direction. The other chair, as you know, Friday mornings we have the joint program, the California Council of Citizens with Low Vision and the Committee on Access and Transportation. And we had very fortunate, the Project Action, Easter Shields Project Action, was able to send one of their trainers to come out here, which they normally do not send out people to conference and conventions. It's high priority ones, just like they'll be sending Donna Smith to the ACB convention in Las Vegas. They don't have the money to do it as much as they'd like to, so a lot is done online, webinars. So we're very fortunate that, and what I'm leading up to is we have the recognition. They think, different groups think of the California Council being very important and worthy to send people out from D.C. And we are needing to know, since we're going annually, Bernice Kandarian is the president of the CCLV, and I need to know what are some of the topics you really feel strongly about at our next convention, which will be somewhere in Southern California, so that we can best address your needs. I got some ideas from people yesterday afternoon, but we want to hear from more of the people on that. The other thing now, as the chair of the Committee on Access and Transportation, two bits of information. I know the audience is rapidly disappearing, but and it's amazing Friday night didn't ramble about this around transportation. There's a 45-day comment period that started on March 21st in California for changes to the California Building Standards Commission, Chapters 11A that deals with public housing, and Chapter B that deals, 11B, that deals with the Division of State Architects Authority. And there's a lot of things in there to deal with destination-based elevators. A lot is modeled on the California requirement. One thing that I've been running into a roadblock is that on these elevators, the industry says they can do it. They do it in San Francisco, but I can't seem to get any requirements. Instead, when the access button is activated, that the display be what most people have said they like, is white characters on a black background. They just leave it light on dark or dark on light, and no specificity. It's going to be really helpful for people, and we'll try to get the word out, start with through Bernice, to kind of respond on that. That's really important for you to have the actually adequate contrast on the displays or the touch screens. They need to get that more than just for myself, and that's a change there. I am struggling through a 900-page document of exciting regulations that succeeds to put you to sleep within minutes after you start going through. But anyway, that's something to alert you about that. The other thing is, and this is my, as a member of the ACB Environmental Access Committee, a document was brought to us just about now, I guess 3 weeks ago, from the National Institute of Building Sciences, which is a document that's been developed, they've been working on for 5 years, and it's to come up with guidelines for persons who have low vision for the built environment. And they were asking for our support, and this is to do with lighting, contrast, a variety of things for the building, because they're saying that very little is in the ADA or other federal statutes. And if there's some things like talking about that every building should have a transition spot from a corridor that's entering an atrium in a building like a Hyatt Regency, that you have a little part of the corridor be a transition period where you go from change from one lighting setting to another one. These are some of the things they're talking about, even linens, tabletop linens, tables being contrasting. So the deadline was April 4th, but right now the Environmental Access Committee has reserved the right, asked that they have opportunity to provide more input. I know there's going to be a call that I'm going to miss later today on this, and they're planning to put some more things. If you got those of you who have low vision and really have some specific issues, please send them, email them to me this week. I mean, really quickly as possible at my email address, Lozanoe, that's Lozanoe, at csus.edu. That's the quickest way. Give me the things as specific as possible. If you got some wording to suggest, go ahead, but let's have it. And I mean, time's the essence on this. And no, we did not know about this, and I don't know whether I got the sense that they didn't even know the state, the national organization Low Vision didn't have it yet. I understand members of this committee that have been working on it are members of the Virginia Council of the Blind and had never brought up to their affiliate either. So, and there's probably the majority of the people are architects and other specialist professionals, and with a small handful of people with low vision representing groups. So please give them to me so then I can funnel into it so that the ACB National Office can then forward them on. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Smith, I think, has a question, and then several people do. Ed's coming around with Mike.
Gene, I commented from CCVLI regarding those that whole the build out regulation proposed standards because CCCLVI asked me to take a look at them, and I got them about 2 weeks ago, looked at them, and commented briefly to them about a week ago. So at least we did get them, and CCLVI has commented, and I know specifically I commented about the school bus yellow for curbs and curb cuts and warning areas, and I'm trying to remember what the other issue that I thought was very important. I commented specifically about traffic signals because I thought that that was one thing that was lacking in that whole report. But basically, it was a very comprehensive report. I was very impressed with what I saw.
Could you, Dan, send copies of your comments
all
to
of you
Gene?
Who have done that, send it to me so we can at least reinforce it there. Because there is a individual, a member of the EAC, who is very much opposed to yellow. So it would be really good there, despite other committee's people. Thank you.
Madam Chair, this is Ron Brooks.
Go ahead.
Yep. I just want to comment on something that Gene alluded to in his report, and that is the participation of Project Action in your conference. Project Action faces a very uncertain funding future in reauthorization. They're funded by technical training money from the federal government, and I'm not sure that money was very much in play in the reauthorization. We didn't do a resolution, and I didn't think to suggest one, but it might not be a bad idea if you guys are of a mind to have the California Council issue a letter to the each member of your very large California delegation in the House and Senate, just acknowledging Project Action, informing your delegation of their participation and of the value that they bring to the discussion between the disability community and the transit industry. And just urging the delegation to support Project Action. They would never ask because they're not allowed to lobby, so I'm doing it on their behalf. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ron, for bringing it up. And also I want to thank you, Ron, for your excellent contribution, too. And I'm sorry you played a big role in the that Project Action workshop, and I think we would not have gone everything that we did cover if you hadn't been present. So thank you very much.
Okay. Next comment or question?
I don't know whether we want to lock too much on particular colors because the real detectable difference is brightness. the term color contrast is actually, it's starting to change to just contrast. Because you can have perfect color contrast and no real contrast.
Ed? So, just let me comment something on that, too, is we're all in agreement about the visual contrast. Yes, that's important. But also what has to be accepted, too, and I'm not focusing on you, but there is a lot of research that has been done with people with low vision, different eye conditions, that have found that yellow is a color that a lot of people on top of the contrast recognize. And there is an individual who, because they do not have that ability to see that color, then thinks no one else should have it. And so we should not at the same time not consider when there's certain colors people can see and there's documentation of it either.
So you're talking more about usage here then also?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
And this is a wonderful debate that continues. Yeah,
but this is not the appropriate place.
Yeah.
I'm not debating. I was just trying
to clarify. But it's
debating.
I'm sharing with you is that we definitely need to get together and share some history because this is an issue near and dear to the community, and we're all pretty strong on all areas. So thank you for making that comment. Next comment.
I see no other hands, Madam Chair.
No other hands?
Excuse, there is one.
Okay. Ed's on the run, so maybe there is a...
Just really quickly, this was a comment not towards this subject, but it was one just prior in regards to Pam's sharing accessibility when it comes to raffle prizes and envelopes, that it be Braille. I'm sure sometimes we have last-minute individuals that submit donations in envelopes, and that's not always possible. It's wonderful to be able to have accessibility, but sometimes those last-minute entries, we would want to welcome them. That's all I just wanted to share. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? By the way, she still will not let me near that giraffe. Oh, another one. There are two against me. Okay, do we have any other committees who wish to share updates? Yes, Mitch.
I haven't talked about the Committee on Employment Assistance for a while, and particularly... since it was mentioned last night, Committee on Employment Assistance has had a no-interest loan fund for over 30 years. That fund currently has something in excess of $22,000 in it, and it's available to individuals who need such equipment to retain and or acquire employment or self-employment. And every few months, the president bugs me about writing something for the BC.
Yes.
And hasn't happened so far.
No, he doesn't obey.
I will not commit to do it shortly, but I know it has to be done. But to let folks know, that fund... at least while I chaired the committee previously, I think over a period of years we had assisted something in excess of 30 people to get equipment. I don't know what happened during the few years I was not chair. We currently, at least since I became chair again, we have assisted two individuals, one of whom completed paying back the loan late last year, and the second individual is in process thereof and should have paid back the loan by the end of this year. So just to let folks know, it is something that is available. You don't have to be a CCB member. But we really do have the ability to provide some assistance to you if you need equipment that is employment related.
I heard that about a BC article.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now you're going to have to deal with two of us. You can deal. Yes. Any questions first?
More,
any questions?
More committee?
Question on CEA. Okay. Linda.
Is there a prescribed time period for repayment of such a loan?
All right. Mitch will respond when he gets a microphone. Ed's running back and forth. They're on opposite sides of the room.
Linda, it's contingent upon the amount of the loan. The requirements have changed a little bit since I wrote the originals back in 1983, but typically the payment period is up to 3 years.
And it's monthly payments.
And it's monthly payments.
Yes, that are submitted. Any other questions on CEA? Any other committees wish to give update? Okay, seeing none, or hearing none, let's do our last drawing for the $80 door prize from an anonymous donor. I hear Deborah Thompson, are you in the room? Nope. Warren Cushman, are you in the room? Bill Gillespie, are you in the room? No, CCB doesn't want to take this donation. No. Thank you so very much. Congratulations, Bill. I wish to thank each and every one of you. The next convention, you will have Jeff Tom as your presiding officer. I wish to thank you for these past several years. Thank you for the Life Membership Surprise. And do I have a motion to adjourn? Second. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, abstention, motion carries. Thank you.